Hi, welcome to Rockle and Russell's YouTube review. Each week we'll be setting each other challenges on YouTube and finding videos for hopefully your entertainment. Hope you enjoy this current episode.
I've no idea how to start today, mate, other than how are you?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, I was thinking we'd probably start with the fact that we've sort of seen each other since the last time.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well,
did one of these.
Yeah, it seems like ages since we've done this, but yeah, we have seen each other, which was great. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah, that sort of, I suppose, seeing each other and going to that shortened the week and made getting together aligning the schedules even harder than it usually is. So
yeah, we went to see Alan Partridge in Birmingham, and I think underwhelming the show, but we, as big fans, I think we enjoyed it, didn't we? Well, I did.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I got a message the other day off a friend who's like equally like a big fan, and he said pretty similar. He said there was some slow bits, but the good bits were enough.
I think someone pointed out, I read a review of it, and they said a lot of the time he's talking to the big screen, so you just see his back for the good 20 minutes with it. But I really like, I wouldn't go see the same show, but he's still doing, like, because he was doing jokes about like Richard Hammond. You think, oh, that's crap, an old joke, but I think Partridge would still tell crap an old joke, so it's like relevant to him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I still use Richard Hammond as a figure of fun when I'm I'm trying to make a point. You know that thing we've spoken about before where you use like a Lee Latchford Evans, for example. Richard Hammond's in my bank for that.
I always, when I hear Richard Hammond, I feel the need to Stuart Lee it and say he's not a real hamster. Yeah, it's obvious, isn't it? And we've both gone with, you actually got me this T-shirt, didn't you? I was going to say we're both wearing NBA T-shirts. But I haven't watched an NBA game in probably 20 years.
Lots of clips.
Yeah. So how's your carpeting done? All good and finished? And
Yeah, it was good. I was pleased in the end.
This is what
one of the reasons it took us so long to do it was because I was just like over planning how to kind of make it work. You know, with having the house clear and empty.
Yeah.
Had to do it, and in the end I just went, right, let's just book it and then I'll have no choice.
Yeah, see, this is what our listeners really want.
You reckon?
Do they want
to hear about when the fitters were a little bit late getting there on the day, and because I had the time booked off to be at home, I was like, I'm not wasting this time. I had previously painted around the massive wardrobe in Dolly's bedroom.
Okay.
Because it's impossible to move, but I knew I had no choice with the carpet. So the night before, I had to take it apart, like split it in. It's two wardrobes lashed together with a sliding door across. So I'd kind of committed that I've got to get this apart because they won't move this.
Yeah.
But if it's in two small bits. So I did that all. And I thought, now that's movable. I'm going to drag it out. And while I'm waiting for them, I'm going to paint behind it. Finally, so I did that thinking, well, it's fine because they've got two big rooms, three big rooms downstairs, the hall, the stairs, they've got all the other rooms they can go into. They walked into that room and I said, oh, there's just a bit of wet paint on that wall. I was just doing odds and sods while I was waiting for you, and they went, we'll start in here. And I was like, the one room wet paint on the walls, you're starting in here. And they went, yeah, we'll start in here. And I said, even with the wet paint on the walls? And they said yes. And then after about 5 minutes I heard, sir,
yeah,
and I went, let me guess, up the stairs.
Yeah, fantastic.
Only on his hand, though, fortunately. He just put his hand on the wall to steady himself, and he just had like paint on his hand. I was like, well,
did a rock all task this last couple of days. I've had 2 days off in a row, which is very, very rare, which has been good. But then I didn't want to do all the little jobs around the house, do you know what I mean? I wanted a bigger project. So we were trying to get some, you know, like white picket fencing down our garden, and it turned out to be like 500 quid. So me being me, tight, I thought, right, the bloke who lives a couple of doors away, he used to be a bin man, and he goes around and he collects like pallets and stuff. I thought I could make one out of pallets, like a white picket fence. And it has been nigh on a nightmare. Yeah, like taking apart the pallets is hard work. And then removing all the nails is hard work. And then I went and bought an electric plane. I planed all the wood and then I've cut it to size and I've painted it. And that's taken me probably excess of 10 hours so far.
Yeah.
And then I know when I put it together, it's not going to be long enough and I'm going to have to start it all over again. But yeah.
I like doing things like that just for the like, I find it fun to do, but there's so many times where I just think, you know what, I'm gonna support the economy and just pay someone.
Yeah, you're not right.
To do it. I'd love to do it myself. I think I'm capable of doing stuff like that myself, but a lot of the time I don't. I used to, I don't as much anymore.
And I've got quite a few golf matches coming up, so I didn't want to particularly hurt myself. And but I've got blisters and stuff, which is fine. You know, it's really like crap to say you're not going to be able to play golf because you were using an electric plane for a day. But
Well, if I know golf banter like I do, they'll make some sort of masturbation joke. And
yeah. I played last Sunday and it was terrible. I shot a 95, but not only did I shoot a 95, I also fell down a hill. I've got loads of cuts and stuff on my arm, if you can see that. But yeah.
Yeah.
It was...
am I picturing this right? You're kind of playing a shot off the top of a slope and just...
I was, on a downslope, trying to chip it out. Yeah. And then I played the shot, but on my follow through, I was watching it, and then I was in a river. Yeah. And the other two blokes who I was playing with were like, "Oh, you okay? And I'm like, "Oh, just start laughing about it. It's fine." You're like, so I played terribly and I hurt myself. But then, I've got more golf to come up to improve on.
Oh, what's it like being around people who ask you if you're okay rather than your old who would have just laughed immediately?
It's a little bit unsettling, to be honest. you're expecting it, so why isn't it coming, you know? Excuse me.
I think you're expecting with some of the old lot, you'd expect them to start throwing golf balls at you.
Yeah, I had a really bad shot on the 7th, which is really horrible and uphill, which is par 4. It's long par 4 uphill. And I hit a bad tee shot that went over the lake, but then hit the mat used by the women's tee and came backwards towards me. I was literally about just over the pond, about 10. I probably hit it. In total, it's travelled 50 yards, but it's gone 30 yards forward and 20 yards backwards. And then I walked to my ball and I just looked at the other two and I went, "Oh, is this my ball?" And they were looking at me like, yeah, that's your ball. Like, I thought, it's a joke. Just like, of course it's my ball. I've seen it's not gone anywhere. And then when I started really laughing at my own joke, then they kind of joined in a bit. But yeah, good lad. I played with the same two people now, JD and Bomber, and they're really, really fun. A Bomber has his own buggy, so that's great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I've got a question. Why do so many, this is quite sort of niche.
Okay.
So often see clips of people driving golf buggies and they hang one leg out the side.
Yeah.
Why do people do that? It just seems like if you did have an accident, it would be made a lot worse by that leg being.
Yeah, is that not the same as putting your arm out of the window while you're driving? Like
maybe
it on the just for air, looking cool. Today I am in the Monmouthshire Beacon newspaper because we're doing a charity thing, playing 4 rounds of golf. Oh, you've donated, thank you very much. So we got in the.
No, I did.
I'll come on to that next. In the Monmouth Beacon and doing 4 rounds of golf for charity. And if you wish to donate, please do. We're like in the top 90 best fundraising teams at the moment. So it'd be great to kind of move up. Someone at the club, the ex-vice captain, sadly died. And so we're trying to, you know, in his memory. I didn't know him particularly well, but I thought if the same thing happened to me, I'd want people to do some stuff like that, you know. Rockall kindly donated some money and put the name Ted Danson from Good Luck Guys from Ted and Mary. And the second it went in, I must have had 4 or 5 WhatsApp messages from the other three who I'm doing it with. And it was like, his wife is called Mary. Do you think Ted Danson's actually... And I knew, obviously, straight away, that'll be a Rockall from a Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of thing. And then I got a private message from the group for saying, that's Ted Danson. His wife is actually called Mary. Do you think it's him? Kind of. and I just left it because I was enjoying the messages coming in. And then I sent them the link to the video of the anonymous donation episode.
Oh, okay.
And my friend Bomber said, that's effing brilliant, Mark. Or Rockall, in fact. There you go. Well played, mate. I didn't know you could do that, but now that is all I'm going to do when donating.
No, that's the first time I've done that. I've always been aware of the anonymous, like it's the box is almost auto filled with anonymous, and then you choose whether to write over it or not.
Yeah.
But it's never dawned on me before. I think maybe because I knew that you were involved, I had a different kind of part of my brain working. Right. I was thinking, I've got to try and do something.
Do you think that's the new getting into the squash club?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mind you, I say that. I did like a online Zoom, like site safety managers course thing today.
Right.
Like 5 weeks, you do one day a week for 5 weeks, and we had to do like a dummy health and safety document. The other team presented theirs first, and the names they'd used for the fake members of their fake company were just their own names.
Oh, rubbish. What is the point?
God, it's like, well, that's what Dolly would do. What's that teddy bear's name? Dolly. Right, okay, what about... So when I saw that they just used their own names, I just thought, oh, I wonder if people are going to recognise my company is run by Steve Guppy, Niall Quinn and Earl Barrett.
Earl Barrett is a great show.
Yeah,
that's such a great opportunity for a little bit of a laugh. So all is well, even though we haven't been seeing each other for a couple of weeks. All is all right in the Rockle camp.
Yeah, I think once we'd, like usual with this, it's kind of hard to get around to it sometimes. But then once you know you're doing it, you're like, you remember why you do it, because you immediately sort of like oh,
yeah,
look forward to it and start sort of, you know, the research.
Yeah, we are on season two, episode 14, episode 48. We have got 2,662 listeners who have stayed with us. And people are still listening, even though we haven't put any content on there for the last couple of weeks. So that's great. Thank you very much. Yeah, have you met my friend Adam? I suppose on my stag do and at my wedding, Adam Lancaster. So he came up to visit. Right, Adam's like big in the world of literature, like children's literature. I don't know if I've told you this, but he sent me the list, showed me a list, the 500 most influential people in children's literature in the UK. And he was like 111 or something like that. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really good. Well done you. I was thinking, you know, 111 ain't that great. It seems quite niche, this kind of category. But J.K. Rowling was like 200. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing, that kind of thing. And he came up to visit for a weekend, and we did some bits, went to a pub quiz and stuff. And really nice to see him. And he started talking to me about TV themes, and then I mentioned a few TV themes, and he was like, oh, I haven't heard that one. And I went, oh, right, that's good. Also, thank you for not listening to my podcast, you complete cunt. So that's why I feel comfortable enough talking about him now, because I know he doesn't listen. But yeah, he even sent me like a picture of him listening to it. I thought, you absolute bastard.
Oh, like a posed photo. Yeah.
Well, I think it was him in his car with it on the kind of on the dashboard.
Oh, right. Using his fast driving.
Yeah, I know. He was a passenger anyway. Wow. thank you, Adam, for not listening. And I will wait for you to say, I heard what you said about me. But yeah, all's good in the world. So, sports commentary.
What did we watch? I'm going to be a week out. We watched, or what's he called? Ben Affleck. Like, it's a relatively new film.
Okay. Not the...
Like a kind of Fatal Attraction-y kind of...
Gone Girl?
No, that was a few years ago, wasn't it? I'll remember the name of it soon. Yeah, we watched that. I might be a week out. I've got a feeling we watched a different film this week. But yeah, okay. It was just a normal movie night on a Saturday. I was aware that Eurovision was approaching, because you hear it on... Like, Zoe Ball likes it.
Yeah, she goes over the top on it, doesn't she? Deep Water.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't really had the telly on, but any good?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I am definitely a week out. That was more than a week ago, but I just come completely blank on what we watched this Saturday, just gone. But it was like Emma chose it. And I at the time thought, oh, yeah, that'll do. That's not what I would choose. But then I was pleasantly surprised, which is sometimes sort of better than just really liking something that you know you're going to, is kind of turning something on and thinking, oh, I don't know about this, and then actually enjoying it.
Do you think there's too many films that are called the and then a job title, and the person is doing that job but is really like a CIA agent or an ex?
Oh, right, yeah.
I watched The Contractor with Chris Pine, and it was very much like The Accountant. or the hairdresser or the refuse collector or just I think I might be done with the movies.
I don't know if I've seen any, but I know exactly what you mean. When you started to say that, I kind of knew where you were going with. Oh, Knives Out, we watched this week.
Oh, that's quite good. I got panned by everyone, but I really enjoyed it.
We'd enjoyed recent Poirot's.
Yeah.
And then we're still kind of in that, you know, in that mindset. And then when we finished then, Emma was like, oh, I wish there was more of those. And I said, oh, I remember seeing like Knives Out as like a kind of bit of a, you know, like a whodunit, just with just, you know, relatively like modern in terms of, you know, being made recently. So that was on the kind of save list for a few weeks. And then, yeah, that was it.
I started watching the Panavarate yesterday. It's like Mike Myers' new like mini-series on Netflix. It's 6 episodes and he plays pretty much everyone. And it's a reporter in a Canadian like news channel has been told basically get a big story or you're out on your ear. And he goes and tries to bring down like a big kind of Illuminati kind of group when he plays everyone. It's really, really Mike Myers. There's lots of kind of Austin Powers references and stuff. And, you know, it's not references, but you can see how his brain works kind of thing. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I've got kind of probably 4 episodes in now. And I will finish it, which is unlike me. I was going to talk to you about West Side Story. So we went to a castle quite near us in Wales, you know, there's quite a lot of them. And it had big, like, open-air cinema kind of thing. And they played...
Emma's doing open-air of West Side Story soon.
Yeah, so it was the new one, the Spielberg one. And we turned up with big patio chairs, basically, like loungers, and a full double duvet and an umbrella. And people were kind of, like, talking about us because you'd hear one person would look at you and then talk to the person opposite them, and then they would both look at you again. That, you know what I mean? And I couldn't give any less of a shit about that. And and it started raining, so I kind of put the umbrella between the two chairs, and we were sat there as everyone else was running for cover and stuff. And it was great. But have you ever seen West Side Story? Do you know the story of it?
Sharks and Jets.
Yeah.
Officer Krupke.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Are you going to see it with Emma?
No, she's going with like a friend.
Yeah. So, yeah, Jets are New Yorkers. The Sharks are Puerto Ricans. Do you mind if I ruin the film for you?
No, I think I saw like one bank holiday a few years ago. I saw the like original kind of movie on the TV where the Puerto Ricans are not Puerto Rican. They're like... Yeah.
They're like browned up.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the best colour.
Yeah. So, yeah. They look, horribly tanned, don't they? So Riff is the leader of the Jets and Bernardo is the leader of the Sharks. And Riff has a friend who's just come out of kind of like juvie who is called Tony. They go to a dance. Tony falls in love with Bernardo's little sister. And then they have the Sharks and the Jets have a fight. And Bernardo accidentally kills Riff. And then Tony kills Bernardo. And then he goes to see Maria and she kind of forgives him and they're kind of all okay. And then Tony goes out into the street because he gets told that Maria's been killed and looking for the guy who killed Maria. And then someone kills Tony, right? That's kind of like the whole thing in a nutshell. And, you know, it's kind of loosely based on Romeo and Juliet. But this all happens in the film in a day. They meet at a dance one day, they've killed overnight, and he gets killed the next day, and he falls in love far too easily.
yeah
absolutely brilliant. I never knew it was one day. Do you know what I mean?
No, I wouldn't have known enough about it to kind of know that. I know Emma was looking forward to it for a while because she kind of ummed and ahed about whether to go and to do, but booked and she's going. It's not, I've not like avoided going and said no, go with someone else. That's kind of the thing that we would do together a lot of the time, but she had a willing companion, so it was like, crack on.
I think the original West Side Story is possibly the best musical film ever. I'm putting that out there. Disagree with me as much as you want. I think also personal preference, also the best, but there you go. We've got quite a few tickets coming up, actually. We're going to see Ed Sheeran and Darren Brown on different bills, different places. Yeah, and we went to see Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Did I tell you about that?
No, I think yeah. So
we went to see Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe at Bristol Hippodrome, and then just kind of tickets were pretty much cheap. I think they were like £13, and we had the whole row to ourselves, but they were like bench seats, so we were proper lounged out watching it. And then the witch was Samantha Janis. Absolute bonus. Oh, right. Yeah, well, happy. Yeah.
And it was absolute all, what?
Absolute bonus.
Oh.
And it was all put together really well. But yeah, well worth seeing, even though it's a child's story, if you know what I mean. I still enjoyed it. It was good. Yeah, lots of stuff coming up, but not as much stuff as sports commentary. That was no way a segue. Talking about sports commentary, what kind of jumped out at you when you thought about it?
More, I think more than ever, the fact that I'm primarily a football fan.
Yeah.
I had to start actually sort of stopping myself from just keep going back to sort of, there'll be like people who listen to this who sort of know what I like will be thinking, oh, he's going to choose this, he's going to choose that. But I kind of couldn't, probably stuff we've spoken about a lot before. And I don't know, I'm always a little bit sort of conscious about choosing anything too obvious.
Yeah.
The next thing I sort of started thinking about was, I like it when commentators, when you can tell in their tone of voice that they are genuinely like in the moment rather than doing their job. But then again, all of those are football as well. Mm. And then there's a Kobe Bryant basketball clip of his last game for the Lakers that I really like. And the commentary and that really adds to it. It's a good clip anyway, but that's like 6-7 minutes of game footage, which is not really super. And then I just started looking elsewhere.
Yeah. I really like it in commentary when you can tell that the co-commentator is a fan when it's another sport. In football, I really hate it.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I think there's too much of like pundits and commentators currently now. That kind of... they seem to have embraced years ago, it would all be speculation. Oh, so-and-so supports them and he hates them and that. And they're all quite open about it now, aren't they? Because of how many ex-players there are in it. They can't hide the fact that they don't like that team or they're against that team. That like definitely leads to crazy Twitter conspiracies about, you know, who and everything else. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like if you just hear someone going mad about a sport that you don't really know anything about, you find it more genuine because you're like, he must mean it.
So Brian Moore in rugby union, when he used to do commentary, I think he'd genuinely get upset about England doing badly and shout at players on a microphone and stuff, and it'd be, you know, genuine and entertaining. But then, like in football, I think England-Scotland, when they had Lee Dixon and Ali McCoist, I just felt it was forced.
Oh,
forced bants.
Oh, you wouldn't have got to that one, Dicko.
Yeah. Oh, God. When you text me during the week about Ben Shepherd, what actually happened there? Was it awful?
David Noble. He used to play for Stevenage or something, didn't he? Mark Noble.
David Noble was my age and went to Stevenage and then went on to play for Arsenal and Boston and Watford. There you go.
Yeah. Mark Noble's last game for West Ham, and they did last home game, it must have been.
Yeah.
So they had like a big sort of on the pitch presentation planned afterwards. And things like that can be good, you know, if they're genuine and like one club man and all the rest of it. So I didn't watch it at the time, but I sort of saw the footage later on that evening on Twitter, and he was stood at the side of the pitch waiting to come on, and the PA was doing the announcement, and I was like, that sounds like Ben Shepherd. And I thought oh God, because he's always on like Good Morning Britain, and whenever they're like the football on or anything, he'll always do like football banter, and he'll say, my team West Ham, and he always kind of makes a point like wearing, you know, like a badge of honor. Noble's gone, goes out and sort of joins him on the centre of the pitch, and within a second, Ben Shepherd called him Nobes. And I just went, fucking hell, what is wrong with people? Like, if they are mates, even if they are genuine mates and they do know each other off the field, I haven't got time for it. I'm sorry. I've heard it before. Like, Five Live presenters calling Virgil van Dijk Virg and Henderson Hendo.
I can't get on with it. But then, like, I wouldn't do that to, if I was like in front of a lot of people, like, I wouldn't use a nickname of someone's, like, you'd obviously give them their, you would say Mark at least, or, you know,
yeah,
or Mark Noble. But if, even if your mates just say Nobes, just makes it just sound shit.
Yeah, I struggle with it. Like at work, like Ian refers to some people he knows well by like a nickname, surname with a not a nickname, just then their surname with a y on the end of it.
All right,
basically. And I just can't bring myself to do it, even though I know if I refer to them by their first name, it will cause confusion, because that then that person will be like, oh, like David who. And I'll say, oh, David Walsh, because I just can't bring myself to say Walshy. I'm not saying it.
That's fair enough. Do you remember we went to, I think, Leeds before we went to the semi-final, and we were playing a drinking game, and you weren't allowed to say anyone's nickname because everyone knew each other, like, in our group with nicknames. And there were people in our group, I think like CJ and Bod, like were genuinely asking people what their real names were. And we'd been friends for like 5-10 years. Just absolute madness, wasn't it? So like CJ called James, Bod called Michael, but it's just weird to call them that, you know.
Yeah, there's a few, isn't there?
But if I was doing a speech to Wellington City Football Club and I said, right, out you come Bod, it'd just be, the crowd would be, who the fuck's that?
Yeah.
I know they knew they were there from Mark Noble, but anyway. Yeah, well, I don't know how far we got off the topic there, but
it's loosely attached still. It was a sporting event.
I remember Russell Brand was talking about West Ham, and then a couple of fans were saying, oh, you're only here because it's trendy to support a football club. You weren't here before, like, we didn't see you here before you were famous. And he was like, well, how the fuck would you know who I was if I was here or not? Like, what are you talking about? sports commentary. So we have got, like you say, football just came so quickly to me when you think about big moments of Rooney, Aguero kind of thing. And my favourite, I think, was Bergkamp in the World Cup, his goal against Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
But done by a Dutch commentator when he's just going absolutely mental, and you can feel like he's as happy as anyone else is watching that goal. But yeah, I tried to stay clear of football, to be fair. and I really liked, I avoided the Brian Moore hockey one. If we're great Britain, Germany, when he goes, the ball is in the Germans' net, and where were the Germans? But also, who cares? Like, I really like that. But I didn't go with that because I thought it was too obvious. Should we play a clip?
I don't know. There. I think we think that's obvious because of we like things like this and remember it. I think the majority of people that might listen to this would not really have too much of a knowledge of that hockey clip. I remember it because for some reason that was played to us in like A-level PE at school. Well, not for some reason, obviously it's sport related, but I don't know why particularly a hockey clip, whether it was just that clip was being played as for something else.
Bachelor of Southgate, and Shawani of Starport makes it 3, and the players are off the bench this time. 2 goals for Imran Shawani. Where were the Germans? But frankly, who cares?
Absolutely brilliant, isn't it? I'll play the Bergkamp one as well, because it's great.
And there is a free kick to Holland. The referee are judging that Ortega had made a meal of that. Beautifully pulled down by Bergkamp! Oh, what a goal! Dennis Bergkamp has won it for Holland!
Right, and now let's go for the Dutch commentary.
Nederland gaat in de halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp! Die neemt de bal feilloos aan! En hij schiet de bal erin! We spelen nog officieel 20 seconden! Dennis Bergkamp!
I'm just so happy for him.
Yeah. What a weird time and moment in a match to remind the viewers that Dennis Bergkamp, he says Inter Milan.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Bergkamp played Arsenal by then.
Yeah, I'm not even too sure. I'm going to listen to it again. Listen out for that.
I'm sure he says Inter Milan as he pulls the ball down.
Nederland gaat in de halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
I think he's probably saying with the ballon or mid inter ballon, which might be with the ball. I don't know, we're just guessing. Any of our Dutch listeners, please let us know what he actually says in that moment. But yeah, to, like I say, I just love people getting so impassioned about it. Right, I'm going to play this clip for you, which is some commentary from the Big Bash, Australia, the T20 Big Bash League. And Andrew Flintoff is doing some on-field commentary whilst playing.
Because if there's one thing that you don't need, it's another little hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. In the ghetto. And people, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. I'll take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Now the world turns. And the hungry little boy with the runny nose plays in the street as the cold wind blows in the ghetto. In the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun. Steals a car, 0.6.
Elvis, catch it.
Oh, I can't get that. Is that enough for you?
Excellent work, Fred. Thank excellent, you. Excellent work.
That ball has left the building, not Elvis.
Right, excellent. So that was Andrew Flintoff playing in the Big Bash. I'm not sure who he played for, but yeah, they do a lot of player commentary, and I think it's really good. Do you like the kind of mic'd up moments?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've seen a really good Shane Warne one before.
Oh, yeah, I was going to play that next.
Yeah. I just saw you typing it then, and I was going to say that's my only other kind of contribution. I've seen a Flintoff one before and a Warne one before.
Okay,
if it's the same one.
So Shane Warne playing for the Brisbane Heat. Hopefully, it's not an advert.
Sending himself there for this over, so I try and get a bit wider to him, a bit slower to start.
Down the wicket, he's gone for it. He played it into the gap. It's safe. Well, mate, that worked.
Oh, let's go.
That's what you wanted him to do.
Perfect, wasn't it?
I think to this guy a slip, and I reckon he might get a short cover to you or to slip. There's a little bit of grip. No one, righty. Don't let him block and run.
Forrest goes to 9 and McCullum 36. What about to McCullum, Shane?
He might be trying to shake the sweep one after that first one, or maybe even go inside out again a bit harder, so I might try and slide one in there. Fast.
Well, you called it.
Try and sweep too, yeah.
That is just like next level knowledge of a game you're playing, isn't it? It's absolutely madness.
It rules out anybody being able to say, oh, we didn't mean it, or luck, yeah, or all that kind of stuff. So it's a great thing to be able to do. I don't know how many sports it could work in.
Yeah.
But good. Because, when you're a fan of sports, you always want to sort of give the benefit of the doubt to the sportsman. When you hear people say something was lucky, I always think, oh, well, it's not lucky, is it?
No. And like, you know, how many cricket balls he's thrown down a pitch to someone that knows, because he did that first time because I bowled that, he's going to try and do this if I bowl this, and that's what I want to do, and that will get him out, and it got him out. It's just like next level shit, isn't it? And then I like with Flintoff. Flintoff did a couple of the, he did one while he was batting as well, and he's talking about like how many Red Bulls he's had. He's had one for bowling. I've got one left in the bag for bowling. And they ask him to kind of commentate on the last little bit. And he doesn't know the bowler's name even. It's just like you can tell he's just there for money. It's I like that kind of, like you say, I don't know how many sports it worked with. They do mic'd up, don't they, in the NFL, I think. If you look up any mic'd up,
yeah,
they have like, but they're not really, NFL players, a lot, well, a four-hour game, 3 hours of it, they're probably on the side, aren't they? So it's not really that.
Yeah, I think they've, I've seen it in basketball, but only in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And not always. I think they've done it. I've not seen it. The only basketball clips I've seen of it have been in All-Star games, which is probably sort of a bit safer because it's fun, isn't it? So it's less likely to people to be effing and jeffing.
Yeah.
Snooker, it would work, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, because they've got to be silent, haven't they?
I suppose they've got to be silent for the players. So if it's the players talking themselves. But yeah, I like it. Obviously, I don't really know a lot about cricket, but I've seen the Warn clip pop up once before, and I remember really thinking it was good. And I know like that form of cricket itself and some of the kind of more modern forms of cricket in themselves have kind of, you know, generate more viewers because they're more it's more instant gratification. But just that's the kind of thing that would make me watch something. If I knew, oh, that's on and they're mic'd up, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna watch that. Because I think part of the problem for me is that these sports I've not followed long enough, so I don't understand enough about them. And I like to know what I'm watching. And I just think if someone was called doing what Warren was just doing then, not so much Flintoff singing Elvis and not knowing people's names, but what Warren was doing, I think I'd be like entertained by it, and I'd also feel like I was learning.
Yeah, oh, definitely, that's about the sport as well. Really good point. Do you watch a tennis at all?
No, not as a rule. Probably in the 90s, I was kind of quite into it almost at school because we sort of play it quite a bit still in sort of summer after school, summer evenings and that. And then the noughties, I remember watching it more avidly around about the time. Was it 2008 when Nadal and Federer had many sort of epic games, but I think the 2008 one was the one I remember watching and being sort of glued to.
Yeah, because they mic it up in like charity events and stuff, and it's not particularly great because they're trying to be funny and they're not funny people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? But I don't particularly like you probably with cricket. I don't particularly like watching tennis, but I will watch like Nick, is it Kyrgios, the Australian guy? I'll watch him messing about playing tennis or getting angry. I'm quite entertained by him, but I'm not a big tennis fan. I'm not very good at tennis and I don't enjoy watching it. But you're probably the same with cricket, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Have you seen Nick Kyrgios when he's being heckled?
Yeah.
Someone's telling him how to do it, and he says about Ben Stiller.
Yeah, are you any good at tennis? Yeah, well, I don't tell you how to act. Yeah,
I don't tell him how to act, and then the camera cuts around and Ben Stiller's just
there's a good one at Wimbledon where he serves and it goes out and he shouts, oh, can't buy a second serve. And then he has another go and it goes out and someone in the crowd shouts, can't buy a second serve. And then Nick Kyrgios, I can't say his name, really laughs at it. It's quite good. And then once he was telling himself off before serving, like, you're playing so bad, this is what you get for playing FIFA till 2 a.m. Just think, fuck, you're like a child. But I really enjoy the mic'd up Aussie cricket. And have you been to a 2020 or any cricket matches ever?
No, I've not been to 2020. I think I've only ever cricket was a bod.
Oh yeah,
trip. Yeah,
good old bod trips. And I think I went to a 2020 once, and the team batting first got like 80, and then the team batting second got it in like 4 overs, and you were like, well, let's go home then. And it was like probably 40 minutes long. I do enjoy the cricket. They're an all day at cricket, but yeah, I probably wouldn't go now. Coming in September, the UK is having its first pay-per-view wrestling event in 20 years, right? Last one was SummerSlam 92, with British Bulldog beat Bret Hart at Wembley. And they're having it at the Principality in Cardiff. So the tickets went on sale this morning. My nephew wants to go, and I thought, oh, you know, Cardiff, it'd be nice for him to come over, see where we live, because he still hasn't visited. And if you wanted, right, we got tickets at the top for like 70 quid, right? If you wanted to stand on the, like, next to where they come out, you know, where they come down the ramp and then get in the ring.
Yeah.
How much would is that seat next to the ramp? Just have a guess. A
couple of grand.
£1,200. It's absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? You're not even front row. You're not even near where they're going to be wrestling. You're just seeing them. They're just running past you a lot of the time. So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, but I suppose what a lot of that is the kind of modern day, like, people wanting to be seen.
Yeah.
Rather than enjoying themselves. Like, have you seen Blairs have become a thing again now at football?
Yeah,
I hate them. And I honestly think the reason that people are using flares is because they might get on the telly, or they might get on Twitter, or they might go viral. Yes. I don't think these are not hooligans and kind of like, or South American like
yeah.
crazy partisan fans. They're people that just think, oh, I'm going to make a show of myself, and I might get seen if I'm involved in a flare. And
did you see that kid run up to Kevin De Bruyne the other week? He just got on the pitch and like ran up to Kevin De Bruyne and didn't want a shirt or something. He just kind of hugged him, and Kevin De Bruyne is like, get off the pitch kind of thing. It's, you know, I want to be seen to be being nice, but also this is, I'm at my work job right now. Yeah. And I thought that's awful that people are still doing that. They do basketball now. So many people get on pitch invaders now and stuff. There's a guy, the rugby in Wales actually like stopped them from scoring a try, wasn't there? Because he got involved. And I thought that's bad that the kids run on there. Like, how's he even got to do that? And it's, when they showed him getting on the pitch, his dad gives him a lift over. I just, it's absolute beggar's belief. I can't think what's going through his dad's head of that being a good idea. Yeah, madness.
No,
YouTube shit. Can't stand it. Anyway, right, let's move on before I get into a proper rant about how much I hate children. Right.
Every player's ambition when they turn professional is to kiss that little lady on the trophy. I was talking about the trophy there before we went to Mikaela.
So
does that commentary need commentary? What's happening? I tried to kind of imagine what you would think you were watching if you just heard that, and I don't think it would necessarily be clear.
I like the fact that Dennis Taylor at the end there kind of loses it a little bit. He knows he's it's going to be a fun. It's going to be on Question of Sport, basically. So it's good. Don't mind snooker commentary. John Virgo is quite funny with what he does and stuff. But have you seen the parody of the snooker commentators on Mitchell and Webb look?
Oh, no. No, they're sometimes quite good, some of the stuff they've done like that. But I don't think I have.
It's just like, oh, that's a bad miss. But they're like alcoholics just drinking all the time.
All right.
Yeah, you have to look it up. But
I quite like the snooker sort of dynamic with who does it now, and they're quite good at bringing new people in.
Yeah.
Sometimes things like that have a habit of just being, you know, whoever they had in the chair when they first started sort of getting ex-players in.
Yeah.
And then they would just be doing it 20 years later with no new faces, but like what used to be sort of Parrott, Steve Davis, Terry Griffiths, Dennis Taylor, John Virgo, they have kind of introduced Stephen Hendry to that over the years.
Yeah, Ken Doherty.
And they will continue to do that, I think. It's good. They keep it fresh and it's always interesting. I quite like, I think we said this before with like Ronnie O'Sullivan clips. Snooker's one of those ones that I really like watching, but I'm realistic enough to know that I'm never going to be able to think, oh, the World Championships start and I'm going to watch loads of this, because I just wouldn't have time. But it's one of the things I do sort of make an effort to try and put on and keep an eye out for. But which is weird because I've never really played it. But there's something about it I just like.
Is it because it's a bit like cleaning?
Maybe. Cleaning up the table, yeah.
And you must, maybe something got rubbed off of you when you worked for Riley's.
Oh, yeah. Albanian gangsters smashing fruit machines up was about as sporty as it got at that club.
Oh, bloody hell. Really? You've never told me this.
Yeah, they were awful. Yeah, they used to just pump so much money into the big money fruit machines. And then if they lost, you were like, oh, no.
Right.
Just like smash them, tip them over, start kicking them. And then Just like, oh God.
When you just kind of stand there and bring the police or?
No, because it's all on camera.
Yeah.
It was all on camera, so you don't need to kind of put yourself in the situation where you have to kind of pick up the phone and dial them, because they would generally sort of disappear afterwards anyway, and then you wouldn't see them for ages.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were horrible.
It sounds great.
It was really, like, it was one of those situations where the one who you would look at and think, oh, he's the kind of the alpha male out of the group, but he was nice. He was like respectful.
Yeah.
He would lose and he would win and that, but he kind of was, and you always used to think, oh, come on, like you appear to be the leader of this lot.
Yeah.
Can you just keep back? Cause I've got no chance.
Yeah. Right?
And he never quite did. He was always just like, he would never do it himself. But then when they did, he wouldn't do anything about it.
Oh, that's a shame. It's a crap to put something like that upon you as well. And people that are working there that they're just going to get off. I'm just going to do this and I'm going to get away with it and I don't care. It's horrible, isn't it? You see people people filming on their phones, just going into like supermarkets and just stealing loads of stuff and just walking out because they know people aren't going to bother them because they're, you know, might have a weapon on them or something. I saw this video of a load of kids going into a supermarket on their bikes and then just tipping stuff off the shelves and then thinking it was really, I'm going on about kids again, aren't I? Yeah, anyway, how have we gone from snooker to there? But anyway, it used to be Ted Lowe, didn't it? Ted Lowe, the whispering Ted Lowe, and now they kind of got away from the kind of stuffiness of snooker. But did you ever see the snooker when they introduced like music and stuff and the players were just like shaking their heads and pretending to like get into it like a little bit?
What, like walk-on music?
No, like between frames and stuff, like it was horrific. Because no.
It's been Barry Hearn, hasn't it, in recent years?
Yeah, there's the shootout, isn't there? Well, I think you got 5 minutes to play a frame, and you just there's a great one of this 15-year-old boy doing it. He was really great, and he wins the frame kind of thing. Oh, it's awesome. But yeah, I don't think you can do that with snooker. Where you can do it with darts, and they've made it into this massive arena sport. You couldn't do that with snooker, I don't think.
No, not quite. It's good. I think it's good. They found a good level with it now. It's got a little bit of energy about it, but then it doesn't. They don't go crazy. A bit of confetti at the end.
Yeah.
They have walk-on songs, don't they? And they, I think, snooker players have always had nicknames, haven't they?
Yeah.
But I reckon the nicknames in the past were more natural, whereas now, like, you have to have one, you know, and some of them forced. Oh yeah. Anyway, anyone listening, it's only about 10 seconds long, that clip. So just watch it. Cause I don't think it wouldn't be funny being described.
Okay. Well, Mike Wiley is just about to blow the whistle and get us started. 2002 FA Cup final down here at the Millennium Stadium.
Here we go.
Come on the Arsenal.
Come on, Chelsea.
Come on, Arsenal.
Come on, Chelsea.
Johnson in the sunlight and he pushed it in. Oh, tipped over from Seaman.
Oh,
great effort from Johnson.
Beautiful shot from Johnson. Who have you got on your bench? Because you need to bring on someone, don't you? Oh no, he's putting through. Oh, sorry, it's only my fault.
Switch it now. Lundberg's away. And Terry's brought it. Terry's going to bring it down. Oh, that is some goal. Freddie Lundberg. That is incredible attack. That is some goal. Freddie Lundberg. Well, I never. That is incredible. What vision. That is an unbelievable attack. Chelsea are down and they are buried.
I just love that ending. I thought, end it there when he says that. So that is from the FA Cup final of 2002, Arsenal versus Chelsea. And we were in that stadium, mate.
Yeah, we were.
So yeah, I like the fan zone kind of was taken off on Sky Sports at the time. So if you can watch a match, you press the red button or something and you can watch two fans commentating. But they were too over the top, weren't they? Because they were getting paid to support their side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I knew the Arsenal guy. He used to play football with us, Ed. And he was he was too much of an Arsenal fan. Like Ty is now, like from that AFTV. Very much so. And it was horrible to watch him be so blinkered. And like, I think if your team is playing shit, you should be able to say they're playing shit. And I do that far too much now, especially this week. And so fan zone for the final, they thought they'd put Tim Lovejoy and Bradley Walsh, Arsenal and Chelsea fans, to watch the football. And that's where the It's Only Ray Parlour come from. If you don't know the story, there it is, you know. Tim Lovejoy is still getting kind of wound up about that to this day. It's only Ray Parlour when he goes in schools. What are your memories of going to that game?
I was in Sheffield then. Mm. So I think I remember getting your text message on a Nokia 3210.
Was it a dynamite?
Yes, dynamite. Boom. Do you want a final pick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember getting that and just so obviously looking forward to it. And then I think I travelled to Cardiff from Sheffield. I think I must have gone. I think my dad and brother might have had tickets from another source as well. Because I don't remember. I've got a pretty good memory of stuff like that. And I don't recall like making some mad train journey to get there. I might have got the train to Leeds and then gone in the car with my dad and my brother, I think. And then you lot were all there had gone over from WGC.
Yep.
And it was a long day. It used to be great going there, didn't it? Like when, because the sun was out, like the early starts, just standing outside, not even in the pub, just out by the castle usually, wasn't it?
Yeah, just drinking in the kind of street. And I went back the next year, I think, Arsenal Southampton as well. Maybe not the next year, maybe a couple of years after. I didn't have a ticket, just to enjoy the atmosphere and like.
Southampton was the year later.
Oh right, there you go.
It was only one.
And then me and Dave Taylor just watched it in a bar in Cardiff, and it was great. I think Cardiff fans were quite violent at the time. They had I don't like saying the word firm. It just sounds so bad. And so we were in a pub and we were told to get out of there, and it was all a bit stupid. And you know, when I talked to football with Guy Phil down the golf club. He always just calls it's just stupid, pretty looking blokes chasing a bag of wind around a field. I'm like, yeah, kind of getting more towards that now. But I remember I worked for a company, Home Choice TV, and they had some ties with BT. And at the time, that Cardiff Stadium had a BT stand. So I was offered a ticket, and then two, we've got kind of entered into a raffle about it. So I got a ticket. And then the other two people won the raffle, just went, oh, I can't go, kind of thing. Do you want it? And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe. But the only problem is I had to bring those tickets back because I couldn't sell them on to prove that kind of thing. So, yeah, I offered you first. And then Manish, like, sent me an email. I sent Manish an email, like, where do you watch the cup final? And he sent me, well, this cup final was in my living room. This cup final was in my living room. This cup final. I thought, oh, he's going to stay in his living room. And then I put you on a ticket. And it rang me kind of immediately. And I think, like, to think of it now that we, all three of us, went to an FA Cup final and it cost us about £210, all three tickets.
Oh, right.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm guessing that I don't remember staying over the night there. I think I must have, that journey there, I'm pretty sure we just made that back then. We would have gone back to Leeds, stayed there, and then I would have just gone back to Sheffield the next day. But yeah, that was a good period for Arsenal when I was at university, which feels like I would have missed out, but I went to an amazing amount of games in that time somehow as a student, like cup games, cup finals, cup semi-finals. Saw us lift the league trophy in that season as well.
I remember during the game we were kind of in the mixed stand, weren't we? So we were sitting next to a few Chelsea fans that had like terrible opinions about football and the blinkered view of their team being the best. And like even that commentary when Tim Lovejoy said he's not offside. I want to see that again. He's so far offside. he must be 5 yards offside.
There's just funny turns of phrase. You'd think someone maybe it's just the pressure, benefit of the doubt, that it was the pressure of being in that commentary hot seat that made them kind of get a bit tongue-tied. But you'd think someone who like worked in football in the way that Tim Lovejoy does would not say things like, oh, what a beautiful shot. It sounds like, like what the commentator would say, you know, like when EastEnders every now and again get them to do like football. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even like Bradley Walsh, like he ends it really well by saying Chelsea are dead and they are buried. But leading up until that, he keeps just saying that is, and hasn't planned what the rest of what he's going to say is. That is some goal. That is Ray Parlour. That is a goal.
At what point does he say that is rock and roll? It really isn't.
Before England can recompose, still reeling from the disputed first goal, Maradona strikes again.
Inside their own half, Maradona turns like a little eel and comes away from trouble. Little squat man comes inside Butcher, leaves him for dead. Outside Fenwick leaves him for dead and puts the ball away. And that is why Maradona's the greatest player in the world. He buried the English defence. He picked up that ball 40 yards out. First he left one man for dead, first he went past Saxon. It's a goal of great quality by a player of the greatest quality. It's England 0, Argentina 2. The first goal should never have been allowed. But Maradona has put the seal on his greatness. He's left his thumbprint on this World Cup. He scored a goal that England just couldn't cope with. They couldn't face up to. It was beyond their ability. It's England 0, Diego Maradona 2.
So, a much, much talked about goal, to the point where I probably got information about the kit that you might not know.
Yeah.
About the, did you hear about the numbering on the kits?
Yes, I'd actually, yeah. Like last week, after it got sold, I heard the guy on the Breakfast News telling that story. Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, go on, do you want to refresh?
The players had complained about the shirt they were wearing being sort of too hot in Mexico. So the kit man went out to local sports shops to find a kit, like, you know, shirts that could be worn as football shirts of like a more breathable, cooler material. Just found these Lecoq Sportif?
Yeah, Lecoq Sportif, yeah.
Like blue sort of football style tops, and sewed the badges onto them, and then got like number sets from somewhere that were supposed to be number sets for American football kits. So they were really big, shiny numbers.
Yeah, like glitter.
And then that was what they were. Yeah, like glittery numbers. And then as well, I think that Maradona shirt sold at auction a couple of weeks ago for just over 7 million quid, didn't it?
Yeah, mad. Just that bloke picked that shirt up from that shop and that bloke wore it and that he scored a goal and now it's worth... Does Steve Hodge get that money?
I believe so. I wasn't sure because I heard a while ago that was his shirt because there was that funny picture of him posing with it and he, for some reason, didn't have a top on, as if he just
taken it off.
So I knew that he had it, but when I saw that it was going to auction and it was being sort of estimated for like loads of money, I was thinking, surely that's not his property. But I've heard reports since that suggesting that, yeah, that was, he just decided finally to put it up for auction, and that is, it's considered his property. Yeah. Maradona shirt story. The bloke from classicfootballshirts.com was on the news, I think it was, and he was telling it, and they had a few kind of examples of, you know, the copies and remakes of it. It's nice. I like it's weird, like that goal, there's probably people that like we know that would not be massively kind of fans of the fact that I can be a fan of Maradona and that goal. But a few reasons, I was too young to be like personally affected by that game.
I remember
liking that goal before I even really liked football. Like, I didn't really get into football until a little bit later, and I know that we had like that video, that goal amongst others, on like a VHS
tape, a compilation of,
I was younger, and it was called The Greatest Goals from Charlton to Maradona, and it was basically just but that really lovely footage, like old World Cups.
Is that alphabetically or is that by age?
No, I think, well, the cover had like cartoon drawings of Bobby Charlton and Diego Maradona.
Oh, okay.
And I think the Charlton to Maradona showed that it was goals goals, highlights, and sort of, you know, like the Premier League years on Sky, they just do a, like a story of the season. So it was like that of the World Cups from 66 to 86. Oh, right, so it was just 20 years of like World Cup. So there was a lot of good. But you know, that really particular clip was the like the game footage, but you see a lot of old footage from those old World Cups now, these really alternative camera views where the camera's like up close to the player.
Yeah, or like just of the ball or just his feet. I like
yeah, and it's just something about it that just always looks familiar, because that VHS, like, we had it when I was younger, and I remember like watching it. So I had no idea really. I remember like thinking at the time, like the commentator, that particular commentary, that little eel in the bit, and then when he ends by saying one is the greatest player in the world, although now I believe he was and is. I remember always thinking it was really weird at the time, thinking, oh, how does I didn't know you could be the best player. I didn't know you could be voted, you know, I didn't know you could be the best this, because it's there's so many people playing it. And I always found it a weird turn of phrase. But then years later, I mean, so I would have been sort of like 6 or 7 watching that tape probably. And then like went to secondary school years later and ended up being friends with Dave, and then went round his house once and he had the video as well.
Oh, wow. Love it.
So then all of a sudden you've got someone to talk to about it. But then,
yeah. I like that commentary because I feel like he's almost, he's got a disdain for Maradona in his voice, isn't he? Where he's slipping like an eel, a short, squat little man. Yeah. Like. I think that's definitely not live commentary, is it? I think he's maybe after that.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be that added on stuff, because there's not really much noise in the background, is there? Which there would have been.
You know, the commentary, I think it's England-Poland, when Poland qualify for the World Cup, and the guy says, Henry Cooper, Maggie Thatcher, like, Clement Attlee. Like, I think when Margaret Thatcher died, that was the last living person from that commentary. All the people he named, she's the last to go. Like, I'm sure I've read that anyway. I was going
to
say,
I'd love to do one of them now. Say names like Richard Hammond.
Lee Latchford Evans. Are you listening? Lee Latchford Evans. undeniably. I like that goal when you watch it like full speed. Where if you watch a player now take on a few players and then go on to score, like Ibrahimovic has done for Ajax, and George Weah did for Milan against, I think, like Lecce or someone like Spezia or something like that. But Maradona doing that in a quarter final of the biggest tournament in the world and just by the scruff of the neck. And
yeah, like the Weah and the Zlatan ones, there's scruffy bits in them. Not like there's obviously good bits in them, but there is scruffy bits and there is bounces. That is just so smooth the whole way.
Maradona running with that ball is probably as quick as I can run without a ball, if that makes sense. It's just it's so seamless and flowing. It's an absolute thing of beauty, and I couldn't give a shit that it was against England. It's the best goal of all time. And I don't know, because people say it's like our best film of all time. Depends what mood you're in. My favourite type of goal is a volley, like, or a goal where the keeper ends up getting stuck in the net because it barely crosses the line. Like, you know, one of those goals.
Yeah.
You've got to think about impact, I think, when you talk about anything in football. And I think that is he's the best because he's had the most impact for any team he's played in.
Yeah, it does. It ticks a lot of the boxes that people usually use for goals. So people would say, oh, yeah, that was a goal, but it didn't mean anything. So it was technically good. It did mean something. It was at the perfect time as well. There's so often in football where people are like, right, this tournament is going to be the Maradona tournament, and then it doesn't happen. So he sort of did it when everyone was kind of watching, hoping and expecting him to do stuff. Obviously, he'd done other stuff well in that game. It didn't mean nothing because it was a quarter final, and then they went on. So yeah, there's not many things about it, and I still think that it's those sort of goals are harder to do than a long range shot.
Yeah, I think with a long range shot, you could have 10 goes at him, probably get in 2 or 3, but trying to take on a whole team from the halfway line. We're talking about the best footballers of all time. Made me think of this quick clip, if I can just play this to you, Mark.
And now it's time for the first in a new series.
Pelé!
day. What shot Pele was shitey was worse than Jason Lee.
Pele.
Takes the corner. Pele.
Right, I've shown you this clip just for what Frank Skinner says at the end.
So hey, rubbish, yeah. It's terrible. Still not worse than Jason Lee, though, really.
Pele, his real name, of course, was Edson Arantes de Excremento.
Yeah. You've got to put, because it's on brand for the episode title, I know we've done it before, but you've just opened the gates to Short Shirt Short.
Yeah. Oh, Short Shirt Shorts. It is
Pleat.
David Pleat.
Pleat, yeah.
David.
And I think it's in my kind of Mount Rushmore of YouTube.
Yeah, this goes up there with the panda in the car for me.
Euro 2004 is over. We don't think David Pleat is going to get a job talking about fashion.
There's Rosicki, easily recognisable, the only player on the field in long shirt, long short shoes tonight. Short shirt, shorts.
The Mount Rushmore of YouTube videos. Ah, oh, fantastic.
Please subscribe to us at youtubereviewpodcast.blogspot.com or see us on Twitter at RockleRussell1.